Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Binstown TV. My name is Jim, and I'm joined by my co-hosts Paul and Luke, and today we continue our coverage of Hulu and FX's hit TV series, Shogun. Today we cover episode 9, titled Crimson Sky. Just like last week, we just want to thank all of you who stuck with us throughout this season. We've been saying this the past 3 weeks, especially our friends who hit us up on Discord and our socials. We've been having an absolute blast covering this season with you guys. We've been having a great time on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, and our Discord after this most recent episode. This was a crazy episode, and having all these avenues to talk to you guys has been amazing. If you're a fan of the pod, all we ask is you hit that subscribe button on our main Bingetown feed. And like I said, if you want to chat, hit us up on Discord. That will be in the description, or Twitter, X. I believe we're Bingetown TV Pod on there. Hit us up. Any of those, let's get talking. If you're new to the pod, welcome. We know this is episode 9, so we're hoping you're not new to the pod, but you may be looking for some Shogun stuff after this crazy episode. So, welcome. We're excited to have you, and we hope you enjoy our coverage. Stick with us for the rest of the season. One more episode left. One more Shogun Tuesday left. And we will have a lot coming up in June. So, guys, Crimson freaking Sky. Okay? All I want to start with is that we thought that this was going to be epic war, battle of the bastards, crazy ass shit. And instead, we got some non-action crazy ass shit that is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing episode in a different way. So much to talk about. Who wants to start?
Let me jump in. Because that was freaking cinema to me. That was the best episode of the season. I am very confident to say it's the best episode of the second half of the season. I want to say it's the best of the season so far. IMDb agrees by a mile, too. Like, this is 0.6 higher than the second highest rated episode at a 9.6 out of 10, which is just up there with some of the best episodes of TV on the website. So it seems like everybody loved this. Mariko was obviously the star. And man, I have so many things to say here. I'm going to try and keep it brief so we can naturally talk about all these things as they come up. But my three things I want to mention for the three different characters, the first being Mariko, which this was her best episode as an actor, as a character. It completed her entire arc. And I am so happy that they chose to go this route, because this resolved all the issues I had from two episodes ago, where I was wondering how they were going to make her have some sort of redemption for her intrinsic motivation to live, which was never going to be believable if it didn't happen two episodes ago, right?
Yeah.
And because they took that route, this was almost the only way that this could go that I'd be happy. I can't believe we weren't theorizing that she was definitely going to get her wish. I mentioned it jokingly that Fuji or her probably needed to commit seppuku because they've been talking about it. I wasn't saying that in like a jesting way. I kind of meant that. But this was almost the best way that it could have possibly went. So I'm really satisfied with Mariko's storyline. I cannot believe she wasn't in my top three favorite characters when we did this three episodes ago, but she is firmly cemented. There's nothing that could happen to make her not a top three character of this show anymore. So straight 5-star for her. She was incredible. Now, the other two pieces I want to say here, they're going to be quicker. Yabu, he is just the biggest emotional roller coaster I've ever seen in a character, almost of any TV show, where I was so confident where his storyline was going in terms of allegiances, and it just kept on switching in both believable ways and ways where I just have no idea where we're going for the finale. So Yabu's going to be a really fun talking point for this. And then my third and final thing I want to just bring up is I may have went a little overboard in my Ochiba as a character praise from her intro episode. And I don't mean to take anything away from her. Jamie, on the episode you weren't there, I had her fighting for my fourth favorite character after
me
her
too.
Intro.
I mean, when you asked me the next step.
Yeah, I just don't know if I'm there anymore because she does seem to be her and Ishido are the bad guys, not her guiding Ishido.
Right.
I know she's still probably the head of it, but in terms of just how I view her as like an all-time villain across all of media, she took a tiny bit of a step back, still a great character, but she's not going to be like a top three for me after this. I think it's more just about the good guys at this point. So, but overall, like this was one of the most tension-filled episodes. It completed a bunch of character arcs. I thought JB was fucking incredible, as he always is. He's been one of the standouts for acting, but all in all, this was a 10 out of 10 for me, even though it was a 9.6 on IMDb. So this was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, incredible episode. Watching alone, I was yelling, "What is happening?" to nobody, like three or four different times, because I genuinely had no idea what was coming next. Misleading title, right?
Agreed.
I mean, maybe it's not misleading. And we kind of have this conversation. Don't really like watching previews for the next episode because we don't want to have expectations going in.
Right.
Right. And if we see a scene, we know it's coming up, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Just knowing the title, Crimson Sky, automatically I had expectations just preconceived in my head. And I didn't want that, but like I was watching, I was like, oh my God, so much crazy shit happened. We have 10 minutes left. Here comes Sorinaga. Here comes Sorinaga. Here comes Sorinaga. And he just never came. So Luke, it was funny. You were saying, I think it was episode like 3. We saw Torinaga give the speech and then dip. We were like, that's the least we're going to see. We didn't get a lick of him this episode.
Yeah,
right.
Blew my mind. I never, ever, ever would have thought that. That being said, this was Mariko's episode, right? She was incredible. She shined. Luke, you just said so much already about just her like character arc in general. But my God, she really is just stealing the scene. Even when she walks in a room, we know she's acting, but she still got that presence. It's unbelievable. It's so good. And what you were saying about Ochiba, I agree in the sense that it seems like she kind of lost her bite a little bit, right?
Yeah.
When she first got introduced, she wasn't
stealing every scene as I thought she was going forward.
Right.
She was brutal when she first got introduced. We saw get rid of this obstacle, get rid of that person. Now it kind of seems like she's taking a back seat a little bit, like you were saying. Still smart as hell. So intelligent with the conversations, what was said, what was not said. I mean, she's still a wonderful character.
Yeah.
This episode, nuts, though. I mean, insane. We're going to talk about this. It's probably going to be a long one, honestly. So, let's dive in whenever you guys are ready.
Yeah. I mean, it's April. And Anna Sawai probably has the Emmy nomination and win locked up.
I mean,
if she doesn't get at least nominated, but she should get the dub. Honestly, I might put her up at number two, and I don't know if that is recency bias or not. It would be Torinaga, then her, then JB, which would be crazy to think because I did pretty much always have her locked in at number three just because I love JB so much. And he hasn't done anything to lower himself. It's just that she freaking had such an amazing episode. Yeah, so when it comes to the Ishiba stuff, you guys explained it perfectly. When it comes to her type of character, she's still smart as hell. She's still a great character. It's just that our expectations of her, we were just expecting her to be very menacing, very get this freaking shit done now. She was not taking no for an answer. Now, she still may be that person, and she's so smart that she understands she can't do that at this point, and she's the person that explains to us why Mariko's death matters so much. You know, she's the one who explains to us, if you let her go, this happens. If you don't let her go, this happens. If she dies, this happens. And now we know why it's so important. She's the one explaining everything to us. So still a great character. We have people like Hiramatsu from last episode and stuff. So I don't know if she's in my top four anymore, like you said, Luke, but Mariko, I think she got up to number two for me.
I love it. I love it. And I'm going to keep my judgment on the top characters to myself until we do next episode. We'll do this again for the final time after we have episode 10, but definitely Ochiba's still top 10. It's just the bottom half of the top 10.
Oh yeah.
Rather than the top
yeah.
half. That's the only difference here. So anyway, for the actual episode, let's take a breath and let's freaking get ready to talk through all this because it starts off easy. Just a couple of scenes back to back where we have the final piece of Mariko's backstory where we see those final scenes of her in the snow after her family was killed. Her father, Jinzai, was, I forget if he killed himself or if he was killed, but either way, that was like right after it happened. And then we also see her introduction into meeting Father Martin and her introduction to the Catholic religion. So this is all just kind of connected pretty quickly before we even get the intro sequence. So is there anything you guys wanted to call out, or it just kind of all makes sense now and there's nothing really we need to add?
Real quickly, looked like she was pregnant, looked like she was holding her belly.
Yeah.
I think that lines up with her son. We saw him this episode. It's about the same age. Just, I love this line from Martine when he gives her the rosary, saying, for when you have no, when you have no words, you have something to hold on to. Because episode one, right after the Fuji stuff, we kind of talked about this. We were going into your why she hates Christianity. Turns out she leaned into it a little bit. Episode one, after she stopped the whole Fuji incident, and she went into her room by herself and clutched the rosary.
Yes.
And now we get the payoff, episode nine. So that's really nice. I love it. I like that a lot.
That was the only note I had that I wanted to bring up, Paul. So good shit. You can see her throughout this season at certain times grabbing onto the cross. And the fact that it's so prominent throughout the season, and then they give us that reason and that explanation, I was loving it.
Into the modern time, and this is directly after the end of episode eight, we're having part of our squad, I don't want to say the full squad because Torunaga's not here, but the Osaka squad is rolling up to right outside the city. Two things
I like
that I just
want
to... What, Osaka squad?
Yeah.
That is pretty good. We have a couple of quick interactions on the boat. Just again, Mariko acting as a translator between Yabu and JB and talking about the plan. I guess when they arrive, we find out that there's essentially a hostage of each of the noble families all held in the capital. That's just going to be leveraged for the Council of Regents in Ishido. Just going to lump in Mariko going to see Lady Shizu and Lady Kiri, who have the newly born child of Torunaga. And they don't actually explicitly talk through the plan, but Mariko hands her a letter, which informs them so that they know exactly what's going to be happening while Mariko is here. So again, not too much, but this is all just the intro part of the episode.
When it comes to our do we call it Deathpool or Deadpool because of dead, you know? Did we say by the end of the season, or did we say in this episode? Was that our Deathpool for this episode for Crimson Sky?
Oh, I was assuming happening? It was for this episode, meaning we all got it wrong.
So,
nobody said Mariko.
Wow.
I was going to bring that up later.
Nobody guessed Mariko.
Well,
I think we were all saying that we didn't want it to happen, so we weren't going to say it out loud.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm thinking about it because I said Lady Shizu, and I still think that's a possibility next episode. As now that Ishido is gonna be out there that he is holding hostages, and he's probably gonna have to just say screw it, I don't care what it looks like to anybody anymore. He's gonna have Shizu held and maybe killed to try to stop whatever Torunaga is gonna do, because they obviously didn't get out because the next day didn't happen.
What the hell is with Yabu, man? Like, he's talking to JB right here, and I was like, oh my God, they're boys. Like, they're just talking.
Yeah.
He's like, no translation. Listen to me. And he's like, you understand? I was like, this is it. This is the romance that, like, we kind of wanted to go forward and fight together.
Roller coaster, man. Yabu is the definition of a roller coaster. It's
but
so
Yabu,
crazy.
He's like always genuine though, right? So like, he really did kind of like this JB friendship in the moment.
It's such a hard thing, because we'll get into it a little bit later, but in the beginning on the boat, not the love boat, it happens later. The Osaka is the love shack, or whatever you want to say, when they finally bangity bang. But when they're on the boat, Yabu seems like he's homies with JB. He's saying to Mariko, did you translate truthfully? And she's like, yes. And he seems all excited, and he's saying like, yo, you're my bro. But then when they're in Osaka, it does seem to me like he's using JB. Like, he still wants to use JB as like a gift to get to Ishido and Oshiba. Mm-hmm. Not that he doesn't like him or anything, but it does still seem like he's playing a game when it comes to JB. And even though they may be friendly, he's using JB. That's kind of
totally
how I started
agree.
To take it.
I still think he's playing the position where he can take both sides at any point, and then he just acts on the opportunity when he thinks Ishido has the upper hand and gives him that order to cement his loyalty to that side. I think that's all that happened. I think going in, if things would have worked out Mariko and JB's way, he would have been all in, I think. But also, like you're saying, Jamie, I had that same thought, because in the council meeting, I know JB can't understand what Yabu's saying about him, but Mariko's there. She knows what he's saying. So if he was going to be outwardly against Torunaga, she would have known and reported back. I still think he's just playing that
middleman. He's playing it.
Yeah.
But he still said in that moment, I think he said something like, we trained him well, and like weird things, like still acting like he's the barbarian and not a friend in front of Ishido and Oshiba. And I was like, come on, man, just be friends with us. Let's go.
I really don't think it's going to work out well for Yabu next episode.
Yeah, I have a lot of theories for how this all played out and how it actually was part of the plan. And I'm sure you guys probably have those in your head a little bit too. But I don't see it where Yabu's actually on the side of Torunaga, where he did it on purpose for Torunaga. Well, it'll make more sense when we talk about my theory. But I think Torunaga played him and Yabu didn't realize he was getting played, but he took the other side and he took the wrong side.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's going to make for a really sad death for a villain, because I had just had an attachment to Yabu. So let's keep going here. There is another quick scene before we get into some of our bigger buckets, which is the quick flash to the Portuguese priests. We have Big Papa and Father Martin talking about what happened in Edo. And this is what my whole thought was, why Torunaga sent Father Martin here to start spreading this news that they're weakened. He explains like the whole Hiramatsu scene, and he says that he genuinely believes Torunaga gave up, which is the whole point. And that just is just good dialogue that they put that out there and put that into right in front of our faces. I don't have anything else about those two, because they're going to probably come back into play. But also, you do see the Black Ship's captain. So maybe JB's going to get some revenge and hit him. But no sight of Rodriguez, which is always sad for me.
That was what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I was looking for Roddy, and we didn't get him.
Yeah, nothing too much there. Just Big Papa. How does he know about... Maybe you're just blind to his trickery. Maybe he didn't see it. And maybe if he saw Hiramatsu do that, maybe he would be like... Like Martin, be like, all right, maybe he's telling the truth, but he's either a genius or he's oblivious, or I don't know, getting lucky.
The one thing about Torunaga being so good at scheming and trickery, I don't know how acclimated into the culture and into their town, if you want to say it, or you know, their whatever. I don't know how much Big Papa knows about Torunaga, but it does seem that Torunaga is so good at being who he is that it is widely known. Like Mariko in the beginning, reputation, when she's talking to JB, she says he's a schemer, he's a trickster. So Big Papa, if he knows that reputation, he's probably just thinking of it in that way. And like you said, Luke or Paul, I can't even remember who said it, but if they were there, like Martin was, if Big Papa saw what he saw, it might have been such a good trick that he was going to get tricked.
Point. I didn't even think about that. The idea that Torunaga's reputation is so sound that
you always think
he's not even believing Father Martin, who was there seeing it. That is an interesting point. And
it's like the boy who cried wolf, but the opposite. Like, you're just so good at screwing with people that they just don't believe you.
Okay. So how I'm going to split this next string of scenes is going to be into three parts, and we're going to talk about the first two parts because they're the quicker parts, are the pre-meeting of all the councilmen and Yabu and Mariko, all of that. So like them walking up and them talking with Kiyama, mostly JB and Kiyama talking, and then everything that Yabu presents to Ishido right after. And then we're going to talk through those pieces, then we'll talk through Mariko entering the scene and having her moment, because the first two pieces to me way more boring than the second half. But what I will bring up is I am pleasantly surprised at how much more depth they added to Kiyama as a character after this episode, with both just his one, just great speaking ability in Portuguese. Like, it sounded like just super professional. Like he knew the language very well, which was cool. The things that he was saying to JB, I was actually like, it felt like it was defining his character a little bit more. I kind of liked where he was going, and he feels a little bit more religious than I was giving him credit for. I thought he was solely in it for the money, and he is. JB even throws a shot at him throughout this conversation, but he does care enough to basically protect the sanctity of like sins, like for the seconding of Mariko later, even though he doesn't actually do it, but like he's very aware of it. So I liked all that stuff, and the fact that Kiyama was willing to do that for Mariko spoke a little bit about his character. So I thought he was just going to be pure, just like evil, like Ishido, just greedy and religious, but he turned out to have a little bit more dynamic, fleshed out character traits than I thought.
And I also think the whole scene with Mariko later when she's showing her fighting skills again, but when she's trying to leave, the look on Kiyama's face throughout this whole thing, it gives him more layers, more Crixus layers, more onions here, because, you know, if he was evil or if he was just bad and only cared about money and this and that, kind of like how they're portraying Ishidu right now, he's just, you know, the antagonist.
Power.
Kiyama's watching Mariko and he's scared for her. He doesn't want her to be harmed. He screams she must not be harmed. This was a good episode for Kiyama, and it's only one more left.
In the very beginning when we saw the whole council, I saw Kiyama and exactly what you guys are saying. I'm like, this dude's first one out, right? Like, he's corrupt. He doesn't give a shit. He's going to be too greedy and be dumb. Totally not what happened at all. Luke, what you were saying about him speaking Portuguese, he was very succinct and he was very like the pronunciation was there, and it's almost like that's kind of a part of the culture. That's why Torinaga wanted JB to dive over and over and over again, because he doesn't want to dive and half-ass it and look silly. Like, if they're going to show you that they have an ability, it's because they're, like, you know, confident in it. So.
Yeah. It blows my mind that Kiyama might be my favorite current regent councilman, right?
Well, I mean, like, there's not much competition, but...
like, Ono's at the bottom, Ishida's at the bottom, yeah. Sugiyama's dead, Torinaga doesn't count, and then Saiki, who we, I guess, is working up, has, like, he has a line of dialogue in this episode, but for the most part, he's just a set piece, which...
yeah, he's just standing there.
Is he in or is he out on the plan? Like, is this
could be in.
He's inside the castle, and that's big. Really? Right. Like, we were saying what Paul brought up last episode was that the one thing that he was worried about when it comes to saying Psyche's part of the scheme is that the plan, quote unquote, was apparently that he was going to bring Torinaga in and then roll out, which I don't know how is that going to even work. He's here. So
I think it all changed with the 49 days of mourning. So now Torinaga has to march himself here.
So I don't know. Maybe that's all part of the plan, man. Maybe Psyche's inside the castle.
I want Psyche. I want him to be good.
Psyche
so
inside
badly,
the castle would be big, man.
I have more faith that Psyche's going to be on our team than Yabu is next episode. So I don't know. Take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
But moving on to Yabu, anything else you guys want to bring up? Like, he just presents JB as a gift. Ishido dismisses it, says the heir doesn't care about him. And, like, that's kind of the end of that before Mariko enters the scene.
I just assumed this was a whole front, right? Because I feel like the chances that Ishido or the heir actually, like, believed him and took him in were just very slim. Like, I don't know if this was just supposed to be something to add on to everything else, but I was like, zero chance they go for this, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they think of Yabu as a traitor, which Ishido calls him a bunch to his face.
Yep.
And Yabu's saying, like, dude, if you want to kill me, kill me. That's fine. And I guess that kind of plays into the leverage that Ishido has on Yabushiki later in the episode. Yeah, I mean, this was all just set up for Mariko to come in the back door and take everyone's breath away.
And this was one of the best scenes of the show. Like, Paul, we mentioned last episode about Hiromatsu scene. This is just up there as well as probably a top five scene that'll not change after the finale. But Mariko enters and she just has such a presence and she knows exactly what her mission is. There's no sway in her. She has some interactions with Ichiba directly. Ichiba tries to get all nostalgic with her, which he does again later, but trying to, like, soften her up a bit. But it really comes down to one thing, and that is that Mariko is here on a mission to bring Lady Kiri and Lady Shizu directly back to Torinaga. And she's not even saying that Torinaga is not going to come here and surrender. She's just saying, this is my mission, with the entire purpose being that Torinaga wants her request to get rejected. So then that spreads to the nobility. They realize that they're all hostage. There's a rebellion from the inside, and that plays really well with the attack from the outside that's impending in the next episode. So this is just, like, the genius of everything coming together. And it took two watches for me to really get, like, all the intricacies of it. But whatever you guys want to bring up, God, Mariko's the best.
Dude, there is so much to break down here because there was so much happening all at once, but it's in an environment where every word means so much, right? So the stakes are at an all-time high, which just doesn't matter to Mariko because she's the best and comes in and doesn't miss a beat. I was so confident that everything she was going to say was just the right thing. And Ochiba kind of goes into it later on. She's like, Mariko always knew when to leave a room without being asked. She just kind of, it came easy to her. She just knew what was, she could get away with and what was proper. And she crushes it here because everything's going kind of smooth. they bring up the poetry, which poetry has been such a huge theme in this entire season. And I don't know how to appreciate it. So I know there's so much, I know there's so much,
true.
So much more going on, like with this poetry competitions they're even speaking of. We saw Mariko and Torunaga have one, you know, last episode. Blit comes in huge here talking to Lady Oshiba. And I just wish I knew. I wish I understood the weight of every poem back and forth, what they were trying to do. So I'm excited to kind of dive into that and study that, but that's going to be after, you know, the show completes, because I don't want anything ruined. As soon as that competition gets brought up, we're like, oh, Margo, we'll love to have you compete. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry, I will not be competing. And that's when everything's like, oh, fuck, what do you, here we go. And she's like, going against Ishidu. She's saying, tomorrow I'll be leaving Osaka. I'm taking Lady Kiri and Lady Shizu with me. And the whole room was like, they're all like whispering, like, what's happening? And Ishidu's like, what do you mean, leave for where? Like, why would you need to leave? She's going to come back here in a little bit. And everything escalates. She absolutely nails it, though, saying he hasn't seen Lady Shizu and he hasn't even seen his newest son yet. And Ochiba tries to shut it down, saying, let's find another time to discuss this. Let's take this discussion offline, off the Zoom meeting. So we don't have to hear. Everybody doesn't have.
We might need HR present during this conversation.
And she just says, nope. Thank you, but no, I'm leaving tomorrow. So there's so much more going on. I can talk about it more, but I'll give you guys a chance.
Let me give you a correction there. She actually wanted to leave right away, but she settles for the regents calling a vote to basically give her petition. I think it, like, they're going to review it. Like, Kiyama signs off on it. They said, well, and then Mariko accepts, even though she has no intention of staying for too long. But yes.
Yeah. I mean, while she's accepting, she pretty much also says, sure, you can do it, but I'm leaving anyway. And, you know, I'm following my Lord's wishes and I'm going to leave. And this is also another huge moment for Mariko, just because, as we've seen throughout the series, when she gave us her backstory with her father, everybody believes that him as a traitor, believes that he disgraced his family. But she says, you will not talk to me like this. I am the daughter of his name.
Akechi Jinsei. Lord Akechi Jinsei.
There you go.
Dude, it's like Jinzo, bro. How do you forget that? Come on.
I am the daughter of Jinzo, the best Pokemon card. Pokemon, Jesus.
Pokemon.
Yu-Gi-Oh card.
Cancel him. Leave that in, Luke. I'm leaving that in.
Luke, leave that in. I'm talking to myself. Damn. I just disgraced myself and my family. I need to commit seppuku.
You sound like my mom, dude. Like those Pokemon cards that you're talking about.
Yeah, those Pokemon. But yeah, so the fact that she lays down the law by saying she's the daughter of Jinzai, that's huge, because it shows that what she's already explained to us, that she believes he is a great person, but she's not going to care what they think. She is just saying, this is who I am, and it should mean something to you too. The entire scene was just freaking amazing.
The internet is losing its mind at what that part you're just saying. The quote is, I am no peasant to be trodden on, which is just her just like mic drop moment. Like, you're not going to tell me what to do. Like, I'm not going to be mad, be respectful and show manners to you if you don't reciprocate. Like, and then she says that whole spiel. It was just epic. And I was just sitting there absorbing on the couch. Like, this is incredible.
A huge line was when she said, I will return to my lord on the day we are required to be in Osaka, unless we are being confined here. And that's when that really reached out and was like, oh, okay, now you're putting Ishido in a rock and a hard place, right? And this is exactly what they wanted. And he says, oh, no one is confined here. Of course not. And then he says, but because you spoke in such an outrageous fashion, you need a permit. Goes to Kiyama. It's like Kiyama even had a choice. He's like, Kiyama, do you agree? And Kiyama's like, yeah, whatever you want, man.
I concur. Okay.
Yeah, sure. I agree. But just everything Margo does was perfect, impeccable. The way she bows, the fingertips into triangle, and then gets up, turns around kimono, but like kicks with the right leg to make sure the it goes all the way around and flares so she doesn't trip over it. Dude, everything is insane. I can't imagine the amount of training and stuff they had to go through. It's unbelievable to watch.
Yeah.
NSY's delivery, being Mariko in that scenario where you are saying you're changing the tone of your voice and you're changing what you're saying. At first you're being cordial and then you're continuously being cordial, but then you're also putting them in your place. She didn't ever change like her facial expression. She never looked mad. She just never even looked stern. She just looked as she was supposed to look. And she was very professional while putting them in their freaking place, just as she should be. Just because even though Ishida said you're being outrageously disrespectful, that was just his excuse to give her the permit or to make her need the permit. But really, that was the most respectful ownage I've ever seen.
Hell yeah. You just got destroyed by your own rules. Like,
yeah,
she logic the hell out of that. She was like, dude, my duty is to the liege, my liege lord. He told me to come here and come back. Like, I would love to listen to you. It would be my honor, but I can't. Sorry about it.
And to use like their own culture against them, because it's funny where she's like, we have to allow Lady Shizu and Torunaga's new son to go to their liege lord because Torunaga hasn't seen his son. And if I'm Ishida, I'm like, dude, he's dying in like a couple weeks anyway. Who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. But it means something to them. Honor, you have to let them go. I mean, it's just something, it's crazy because this is war and Ishida knows that his direct enemy is Torunaga, but he still has to allow his direct enemy to see his son before he gives himself up and surrenders.
Doesn't make any sense to me just because we're used to the world of like grimdark and like death and fantasy. Like, you don't grant these type of requests, but it's just
right.
Just shows how cool the Japanese culture is that they would even be willing to listen to that offer.
If this was Thrones or if this was another fantasy book, like you're saying, Luke, they'd be like, oh, Torunaga wants to see his son. He can see his son right before we take his head off in Osaka.
Right. You know? Yeah.
We'll see him in a couple weeks when he shows up. We'll hand him over to his son and then we'll take Torunaga's life.
Okay. So let's move on to what happens directly after this scene with the council. And that's just like the wrap up, the basically reconvening of what just happened between JB, Yabu, and Mariko in their private room. And it's not a long scene, but it is important because Mariko claims that it was all just spur of the moment. She didn't plan any of that. And that's something we can talk about of how specifically that was planned, which I think we agree that it was pretty damn spot on with what she expected to
do. Yeah, scripted.
But one of the things she says is to JB, like, please, please, please do not interfere with any of this. And he's, of course, freaking out. What he says, which describes the situation perfectly, is you'd walk into a sword just to prove the blade is sharp. And that's the whole idea. Yeah. So he gets it. And that's the point. So I think everything was planned. And then, it just ends with her begging him not to tell. Yabu's sitting there like, oh, you guys got to tell me the plan. Like, come on, bro. Get the hell out of here.
Leafless branch. What a terrible poem. Who writes about a leafless branch in the spring? Yabu's pissed off about it. And we know he appreciates poetry because he asked Omi Wei in episode one. He was like, give me a poem about that dude's death.
Yeah.
So to go back to that poem, it's got to mean so much. As soon as Mariko says the line, she was like, oh, we would love for you to give us the first line. She says it. And Ishida, being ignorant probably and not understanding the poetry, he's like, oh, that was great line, that was wonderful, if not a little I forget the actual word,
bleaker. I think he said bleak.
Yeah,
bleak. Lady Ochiba's face is fucking, it almost went down, it was like almost went blank. So she kind of heard Mariko say that and almost got like a warning from that. So I kind of want to dive into that later on and see if there's any more meaning behind it. So if anybody listening, you guys have some theories about Mariko's first line, drop them in the comments, please. Yep. Educate us.
I laughed. Yeah, definitely. Discord in the bio. Yabu does it for me, man. I was laughing when he gets all mad. And we haven't brought this up at all. And I'm pretty sure we all know this. Maybe we don't. But I was going to bring it up, and I just never did. When you guys watched the new Mortal Kombat, did you know he's Raiden?
No. Like the new one that came out with Hiroyuki Sanada?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
He's apparently Raiden. So why I'm bringing this up is because I've seen Mortal Kombat once. And if anyone knows Benstown, you know me, Luke, we love Mortal Kombat. I can say Mortal Kombat's lines from beginning to end, the original Mortal Kombat. So the fact that I've only seen the new one once kind of tells you all you need to know. It was okay, it was fine, it was whatever. But
we're not Raiden, the best part. I will say that.
Yes, he was. And Raiden, I don't remember him sticking out to me.
Same.
But Yabu is a freaking star. So I kind of want to rewatch Mortal Kombat to see him as Raiden, because I was thinking when it came to Kiyama and certain characters like that, I was like, I wonder if Yabu's actor does English speaking roles. And then that's when I saw he was Raiden and I was like, oh shit. So I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to rewatch and see.
How did you stumble into that?
Pretty much exactly as that. Yeah, because I was wondering if he's been in any English speaking roles. And
IMDb'd his whole thing?
So I looked him up and I also saw like a thing. It was pretty early on in the show that was like, oh, Scorpion and Raiden are in, because Scorpion is Hiroyuki Sanada. They're in Shogun together. And I didn't know Yabu's actor's name. So I was like, oh, that doesn't mean anything to me. Then I ended up looking it up and I was like, oh, shit.
Damn, that's pretty cool. A good catch.
Dude, Yabu is amazing. His actor, incredible. Like, just the ones little reaction here when he's freaking out and Marco's like, please excuse me, I'm very tired from the day. He's just like, huh?
Anime. It's anime.
Yeah. Just like the noises he makes is so funny. Like when JB was putting on the suit and he was teaching him how to bow, JB bows and Yabu's just like, grunts in approval. Like he just makes noises sometimes to communicate.
Dude, I'm looking this up right now and he's completely clean shaven. Like you can tell it's him now that we know him and we love him, but I'm looking at a picture and he's so like clean shaven and he has the Raiden outfit on, so you can't see his hair or anything. So I wouldn't have known that unless I looked it up.
Cool. That makes me feel better.
I'll definitely have to rewatch. Because I don't even remember like exactly how much Raiden's in it. Isn't he in the beginning with how Scorpion gets his power? I don't remember. Don't quote me. I saw it like one time. So
okay, let's keep moving. We got a couple other big scenes to get to. This is a quicker one here, and it's the next day after Monica goes to sleep there after that conversation, and she has a conversation with her kid. And wow, does this kid take after Buntaro, man? I hate this kid.
Yeah.
He sucks. So I'm being hyperbolic about it, but he's very into the religion. He's been in Osaka since the beginning, and it seems to be he's being swayed by Kiyama to now having this engagement to his granddaughter. So he's all in on the religion. He's all in on Mariko's family is a curse to have that name. So of course, like knowing what we know now, this kid sucks and Mariko's the good side. Like that's just how I walked away feeling about it. And he doesn't even like care when she's about to commit seppuku later. Like he has no real emotions on his face that I picked up on. So
I
feel comfortable saying this guy sucks just like his father.
Yeah. He's pretty much saying, if you do this, if you continue what you're doing, I'm no son of yours. Mm-hmm. And he so takes Edgar Buntaro in that way. And how can you look our girl Mariko in the eyes and say something like that to her?
How dare you? When he's saying, please don't dishonor us, and she's the most honorable person we've ever fucking seen. In his defense, he is in this place, he's in Osaka, where everybody that is raising him, teaching him, is saying, hey, you're from a disgraced line. So he's always the bottom of the totem pole. He's always the punching bag. So, you get it, but it's such a skewed view of who Mariko and who his own lineage actually is. It's just a shame that he was stuck in that environment and that completely shifted his perception of who he is and where he comes from.
Mm-hmm. And you have to think too, Buntaro is one of those people that thought that she has a disgraced family. So when they were a family, meaning Buntaro, Mariko, and their son, she wouldn't have been able to explain who her father was and why she believes he was honorable and why she believes he did the right thing and her actual beliefs. She wouldn't have been able to explain that to her son. All her son gets to hear is exactly what you're saying, Paul. Everything everyone else is saying, including his own father. So, you can't really blame him just because he's pretty much quote unquote brainwashed. Yeah. It's just what he's lived with. But
I'm willing to not take context into account to hate him. So
Luke will hate him so hard that it'll account for all of us.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, just brutal because Mariko, she's like trying to do what's right for her lord. And now if she does that, she's going to lose her son. Just heartbreaking. Heartbreaking for her. She's the best character. I love her so much.
Dude, just might be number one right now. She is now. Yeah. JB and Torinaga have a chance to jump her, but right now I think she's number one. Let's move on to the reason why she's number one, or part of the reason is this next scene. This is just going to be her doing the pseudo escape, like knowing in her head she's not going to be able to get out of here, but she's going to test Torinaga's plans to the fullest, and she's going to take Lady Kiri and Shizu, who know the plan, with their whole little entourage and openly defy the council's wishes to keep them there until they get a permit. And this is really important because also everybody else that's not going to be like a guard is like on the walls watching what's about to happen because she has openly told the whole city what she's going to be doing. So everyone's like, what the hell is happening? Right. So this happens in two parts. And one of my takeaways from part one, which is like her walking up with her entourage that all end up essentially killing each other. And then part two, which is the second wave of people that come in, and Mariko does the fighting herself. There's going to be a ton that we can talk about here. But one of my comments is that Mariko definitely should have helped out in wave one, because they would have had some soldiers left alive for wave two.
Yeah.
Because like she is by far the best fighter. But two, I love the realism approach that they took in this scene, where a lesser show that leaned into fantasy or sci-fi or just like the spectacle of a TV show would have had like the whole entourage from the first part live. But they actually all died. And we even started it off with a bang with one of the lead soldiers just absolutely murders the hell out of two of the guys that confront her at first. So I was thinking, okay, they might just like get away with just having their Torinaga's advanced guard just murder all the soldiers and they get out. And I'm really happy they did not take that approach. And at the cost of like human lives, like these people were all people that knew what was going to happen almost. They all, and they're even happy to die. Like the last guy that survived says it was such an honor. So just a lot of realism mixed in with just a lot of good action here. And to add on to the realism, I'll let you guys talk, is I was worried in wave two that they were going to have Mariko kill all these guys. And I was like, it would have been really cool to see.
Yeah.
But, like, we got to be realistic. Super Mariko. Right? Like, there was just no way it was going to happen. So it basically worked out in the best way to keep everything realistic and get the job done in Mariko's head of like what the whole plan was.
I mean, the build up, just absolute insanity. I was so tense. You know, they get ready. Are you ready? Like Lady Mariko, like, let's go. Everybody moves in. The first guy, as soon as he's like, you need a permit, she's like, dude, I'm ordered by my lord to escort these women to Edo. It's like, sorry, you can't get a permit. Ah, you leave me no choice. Please kill him.
I love that.
Such a casual double murder right there. I mean,
dude, he bows up before.
He bows, like takes the guy's fingers off too. They showed that, so he couldn't draw the sword as well. Three swings to take out two men. It was beautiful. A fucking archer up top, cheater. I was waiting for JB. I would have bet money JB was gonna like tackle that guy.
Thought he was getting involved too.
I just want to say, when it comes to Mariko, everything about her is amazing, but there is nothing more badass to me than when she didn't move for the arrow for Buntaro, and then this entire scene when the throwdown happens and they're all fighting around her and she didn't flinch or move once.
Yeah.
So cool.
Everybody, it's madness all around her. Swords slashing by her face and ears and every part of her body. And she's just standing there like, I am a badass and I'm not going to move. And if you slice me, it's on you, because, again, that's technically what she wanted, because the whole point is when she dies, that's when Torinaga's plan worked.
Yeah. I was thinking what you said, Luke. I was like, Mariko, why didn't you help out in the first wave? That would have probably been a mark of shame on the samurai, the warriors, because they were like, oh, wow, we're not good enough. We forced our Lady Mariko to join in a fight.
Yeah, when she comes in and does fight, that's all, in my eyes, it was all a show. She's acting like, here, I'm going to start trying to fight you. I'm going to start trying to fight you. And then it's like, ah, you leave me no choice. I've disgraced myself. I have to commit seppuku at dawn or at when the sun goes down, crimson sky, baby. So,
baby,
it was all an act, and it was a freaking amazing acting job.
What? There was like a 3% chance
that she was going to win that fight.
Yeah. Do you think in her mind, she was like, my boys will take out all of his boys?
Well, what if literally she went to throw down with them and Kiyama yells like she can't die? Like, I mean, he literally says you cannot touch her. You can't kill her.
Yeah.
And, you know, to their credit, they're doing very well at just like blocking her down and stuff. But what if she won and then she just walked out? She'd probably be like in her head, like, shit, playing screwed. She has to like walk back in and be like, someone kill me, Jesus.
Yeah. She'd be like, oh, I need to kill myself because I was too successful.
Well, then she would have also needed to kill herself because she would have failed the real plan.
Yes.
So that would have made it.
Yeah. I failed my lord. So now I'm going to be at the gates of Osaka and I'm going to just have to kill myself.
Yeah.
So you touched on this real quick, Jimmy, when you said Kiyama was there watching. He even says, and Ono says, we are powerless. This is not our orders. These are not our men. So they really show how weak they are.
That's also part of the plan because they are regents. And if they admit they don't control these people and they're Ishido's men, that is another check to the strife and to the internal rebellion that's going to be happening in the city. Oh, we're not hostages. Oh, these regents are all equal. No freaking way, Ishido. And, you know, it's exactly what Torunaga wants. It's all freaking... Like, I've never seen throughout a show plans like this happen in this way, where I'm, like, just constantly being like, is this part of the plan? Is this part of the plan? Jesus, is this part of the plan?
It's like Torunaga's like, all right, like, we have checkmate in, like, 107 booths. Like, he has it all he has it all lined out. It's like, okay, we send her in, they're forced to do this, we retaliate with this. It's absolutely nuts. And, yeah, I totally agree. There's no way they were going to get through it, right?
And to your point, Paul, with the chess thing, I saw someone tweet, it was pretty damn good, saying like, Torunaga got checkmate, but he had to sacrifice the queen, Mariko, the bishop, Hiramatsu, and the knight,
Nagakata. I did see that same thing. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Damn,
so
that does work out really well. Fucking episode was nuts. And her screaming, her helplessness, totally, it felt like it came through, right? Like, if this was all an act, at the end, when she starts screaming, she starts like her swings are getting more reckless. I mean, fucking phenomenal acting. They don't give out Oscars yet. The Academy wasn't formed yet, but goddamn, Torunaga and her both should get one because their acting is insane. It's so convincing.
And this ends with something I mentioned when I was raving about Kiyama earlier, but I like that Mariko turns and looks up and asks Kiyama to second her because suicide's a sin. You can't be the one to end your own life. And then he accepts. So we can put a pin in that because that's going to come up again. But are we good there? Are we ready to move on?
Yeah.
Cool. This is a quick scene where we basically get to see the council in closed doors. The council plus Ochiba, who we didn't even mention this, and it's my fault, but Ochiba accepted the engagement to Ishido. Like, they're engaged now.
Yeah, right.
I forgot to mention, that's very important, because that also shifts a lot of the power back to Ishido, and that might be a lot of the reason why I have the feelings I have about Ochiba not kind of being, like, the alpha. She might still be the alpha of the two, but it's, like, lesser than it was when she initially was introduced. But this scene is just the council plus Ochiba talking about Mariko. Yeah, whatever we want to talk about.
Exactly what you were saying. Ishido kind of takes the mantle of power because of this engagement. Mm-hmm. She is a smart one. She's the brains. It's kind of been this way since she showed up, and Ishido knows this. And eventually she kind of spits out a line, and he's like, all right, like, what's your counsel? And she's like, what do you mean? I don't have any counsel. You're my husband. I'm engaged to you. You're the brains. I'm just saying...
if anybody wants to hear it,
you know, if Mariko dies, then everyone will blame Osaka, and Osaka will be disgraced, and every royal family will revolt, blah blah blah. So I mean, she just lays it out square, and pretty much it's just the genius of Torunaga. He
and
saw all of this.
Like, to Ochiba's credit, she nailed what's probably going to happen, because the flip side, she says, okay, if you kill her, what you just said will happen. But if you let her go, all of our hostages here are going to ask to go, and we're going to have zero leverage. So she's smart, and they kind of, Ishido takes everything she's saying to heart
and
for the rest of the episode.
Like, she lays that all out and said, Osaka will be disgraced. Saiki goes, a bit extreme, don't you think? Mm-hmm. And the death stare from Lady Ochiba was insane. I felt bad. I got embarrassed for him that he said something so dumb.
No, dude, Saiki's trying to downplay it. Yeah,
that's what I was going
to
say.
He's like, let it happen. Let it happen.
Yeah, he's cool. Yeah, he's like, dude, I heard all of this from Torunaga like a little bit ago, and now she's bringing it out. So he's trying to push the attention away. Totally agree.
God, that's so funny. That needs to happen now. That needs to happen. If that happens, they can. Yeah, I'm just gonna leave it at that. So let's let's just keep going because this is a really good scene. This is gonna be like a huge talking point all around the internet. I've been seeing people react. Like everybody that's been watching Shogun loves the female actors. Like they're killing it. And like this is a huge just powerhouse versus powerhouse. So Chiba versus Mariko, with JB just kind of being the backdrop that allows this all to happen. Because he gets summoned to talk with the heir in quotations, who obviously that's not the real reason. It's a front to have Mariko be presented to Chiba and they can actually have this conversation. I'm not going to go through all of the things that they say, but a lot of it is breaking down more of their backstory, which we knew a lot of it, but it's really just highlighting how Chiba feels about Mariko and vice versa. It's emotional. It's tense. Like everything that's happening, JB's only getting half of it because he's only involved in the first part of the conversation. And then they drop that front. A lot's going on here. And it seems to be like almost the last conversation between old friends, tinted with a lot of aggression and like, you know, wordplay of what's really going on here. They keep mentioning the games that you're playing here. Like you can end this, all of this is happening. So it's a very politically charged scene. And I'm sure like on rewatches, like it probably gets better and better. Like I liked it more the second time I watched it. I just felt that they spent a lot of time writing this dialogue and making like where they're going to be standing when they say certain things. Like I noticed a lot of those things, but all in all, it was just a great scene that ends with Mariko kind of reemphasizing the need to throw away our life and the beauty in it. So there's just a lot of symbolism here. Just a lot going on.
Yeah.
To just point out how smart Lady Ochiba is. When JB first gets there, she says, I'm told your Japanese is decent. Can you understand me? He goes, yes, but respectfully, I request you use simple words. And I'm like, look at my boy. He's picked up so much. He actually understands all that. He was able to respond to her in what seems like this, like a decent sentence. And she goes, prepared phrase, smart of you. And I'm like, I didn't even know that.
That line from Ochiba.
Like, you literally just met him. He said one sentence to you, and you already knew that. I've been watching him for 9 hours, and I have his backstory, and I didn't even realize that that was a prepared phrase. So she is, like, I can't understate how smart she is.
That was a great line. Thank you for bringing that.
Yeah, it was. I loved how, when this whole thing is starting, thinking about how everything plays out, like you said, Luke, super politically charged, super emotional. JB starts by just winking at the air. and he just winks at him. And I'm like, you just got to think, like, this is the air. This is like the Tycho. Eventually, when he gets older, and JB's like just winking at him like he's nothing. It's a little kid.
I was like, can that be disrespectful? Like, could he be like actually?
He left.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, the kid was like, man, we're cool.
I would have been nervous.
I like how you were bringing up, Luke, the positioning of Mariko and Ochiba through these conversations, because one of the biggest things that was kind of surprising me when I brought up last episode, how is Ochiba going to react when she meets Mariko? Are they going to be friendly? Are they going to not like each other? Is Ochiba going to be very, you're on Torunaga's side, so F you? I didn't even bring up the fact, like a dumbass, even though I knew it, I didn't say it on the pod, like her dad killed her dad, you know, like that kind of thing is even bad. But the way this conversation is happening, it really does seem, unless it's an act, like she's really cares for Mariko, like they're friends, they have this background together. And then the positioning, even though she's giving this conversation to Mariko and she's saying, stop what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. When they get into like telling their backstory, and at the very end of it, she turns her back to her and the tear comes down, and Mariko doesn't know. All she heard was what came out of her mouth, doesn't see the tear from Ochiba. We see the tear, not Mariko.
Genius. And it's cool that Uchiha isn't just relentlessly against Mariko, because that was my prediction when you asked the question last podcast. I thought it was going to be straight aggression, but there is some empathy there. It's way more complicated than just one emotion. And I like that it came across really well, is what I'll just say.
Yeah,
like,
agreed.
They're both balancing all these things, and it's just played really well.
The relationship's so complicated. You guys touched on it. To go into it more, she's saying, like, we grew up like sisters, but our fathers were enemies. Wars raged in our castle, but I had Mariko, and she was my happiness. And then she got sent away. And then this is their first time seeing it since years later, after they become different people. Like, it's insane. Could you imagine, Lucas, you know, when you're like 18 or whatever, I didn't see you for like 20 years, and all of a sudden you and Jimmy are like trying to take my house down. Nuts.
Dude, me and Luke would totally take your house down. And by the way, it's Emily's house, but
whoa.
Anything else we want to bring up before we move on? We got a couple more big scenes to get to, and then we're pretty much done.
Just the kind of the last thing I got was Uchiha saying, well, what do you want me to do? You want me to surrender and have a pointless death like your leafless branch? What she threw that in there. And at the very end, Mariko's like, you know, accepting death isn't surrender. You know, she has the line, flowers are only flowers because they fall, which means, you know, they have a lifespan. So I don't know. It seemed like that really hit home, kind of what you were saying. Also, Uchiha really overstepped the line when she was saying, you know, to Mariko, tell me how piercing your heart will protect your son. And as soon as Uchiha brought up Mariko's son, Mariko was like, all right, time to bounce. This is it. Like, she overstepped. Yeah. And then, she hits her with the last line. So I feel like, I don't know. I don't think Lady Uchiha was persuaded at all. I think this was just a, here's my view, here's your view. This sucks, but I don't think we can come to a resolution. I think we're going to bust.
Right.
Yeah. Which is how it had to happen.
Yeah. I think they both thought that if anybody in the entire world is going to sway one or the other, it's going to be them with each other. And if they're not going to sway each other with the conversation they just had, then it sucks, but it's time to part. And that's how America was just like, all right, this conversation doesn't need to happen anymore. JB, let's get the fuck out of here. Mm-hmm. I'm done with the woods, Luke. Let's roll.
That's so good. Okay, so the two things that happen before we start getting into the montage of Mariko working up to her seppuku is, one, JB goes to Mariko and essentially begs her to not throw her life away. So that's going to be fun to talk about for a second. And then the other quick thing is we see Yabu being offered a shot at redemption if he's going to eventually let the assassins in at night, or the shinobi, if you want to say that. But more importantly, let's talk about that Mariko and JB conversation, because this felt emotional from JB. We've been praising his acting the entire time. I felt the sadness, and I felt the desire to just keep this person that's been centering you in this foreign land in Japan alive. Like, he is so attached to her, and it makes sense that he's appealing to her emotions like that, but she can't say yes. Of course not. Like, JB can't be the reason that she doesn't go through with this like insanely well thought out strategic plan.
Yeah. He's saying, you know, Lord Tor and I are sending you to die. How shameful of him. You don't have anything to prove to these people. There's no need to die. Meanwhile, she's like, you don't get it at all. She's surrounded by men that just don't get it. Buntaro doesn't get it. JB doesn't get it. She's saying, it's the very reason my father kept me alive. It was basically for this right here. What I'm doing, what I'm about to do. And he loves her so much. He's like, all right, fine, fucking, if not for good sense, not for God or whatever, would you consider living for me? Which, she grabs his hand in public, even cups it a little bit, but then backs away. So it was no words spoken, but it was like,
someone's got onions, man.
I care for you, but, you know, priorities, you know, it is to my Lord first and my family for my father's sake.
I think we need to call each other, we need to call each other out. And I think we all logically knew that Mariko's good story, a story that was going to be written great, would end like it did. Mm-hmm. The fact that we were saying, especially me, like, what will happen with Mariko? Oh, she'll find a purpose with JB because they'll love each other and that's going to be her reason to live. That's wishful thinking. It has been written perfectly to the ending that Mariko had. Mm-hmm. So having this conversation with JB, telling Mariko, finally, and if anything, again, Oshiba, JB, if anything was going to change her mind, it would be something like that. And she didn't really sway at all. I mean, right. She hardly answered him. She gave him the nice handhold. But again, JB doesn't get it. Mariko is who she is. She's the best. She has her purpose. And we were giving her shit because we knew they were going to fix it. You know, we were mad about how she was saying, just let me die, let me die, let me die. She has her purpose. And this is how it was supposed to be written. And it's written beautifully. It's a shame for our boy JB. Wish they could be together. They get to be together one more time in the love boat before the end. But yeah, I mean, I just wanted to call us all out because I feel like logically we should have just known that's what was going to happen. But we all just wish that she would just stay alive because we love her.
I was convinced it was a love story, man. It was these two were going to be good.
Fly Manor. All right. So now we're going to talk through that montage because a couple things happen that lead up to this. This meeting of Mariko and all the people that are her stakeholders, like, you know, Shizu, Kiri's there, some of the, her son's there. So she goes to Father Martin to have her last rites or do her last confession for her religion. She wants to clear consciousness before she passes on. This was, I felt, worth doing just because it keeps, like, there was a huge period of Shogun as a show, like where 4 or 5 episodes went by where we just didn't see anything religious for her besides her wearing the cross. So it's good that they, this episode, they took the time, since it's her main episode, to show it in a couple of ways that she is truly religious. It didn't have to be deeper than that. We saw the origin and we're seeing the end of her religion right here. So good moment with Father Martin, also making him important because he truly cares about her. He has not a single evil bone in his body. He's just, you know, he's just a good guy. So while that's happening, and I would love if either of you guys can explain this to me, because I just did not pick up on what was going on with JB in the garden and drawing the line straight before they all meet into that room. And then, you know, like the scene happens where JB steps up to second her in place of Kiyama. But before that, they all meet. What was going through JB's mind, or what was the takeaway that I just completely missed? Cause I'm dumb.
No freaking idea. I had that. Oh, I had that written down. And I just completely made up two things. There was like zero evidence to back it up. One is like the title sequence is like a ship sailing through, you know, the Stone Garden. So maybe that was like a nod to that, going against everything that was set in place, everything proper, like making your own way. Or he drew a line, one side, you know, go on without Mariko, live your life, the other, save her, something. I don't know. I literally had no idea. And maybe there was just, he was trying to see one side or the other. I had no idea what was going
on. Those were great interpretations, better than what I had written down. So I liked both of those.
Yeah, I took it like the first way, Paul.
Okay, that's nice.
Yeah,
singular minds.
We're of singular minds. Yeah, I took it like, you know, everything when it comes to the culture that JB has been acclimating to throughout the series is, especially Mariko, like everything's perfectly in place. Everything's honorable. Everything is exactly where it needs to be. Everything is said the way it's supposed to be said. I took it like, you know, the whatever we want to call it. Is it a stone garden? Is that what the word is for it? Or
Zen garden? Called a Zen garden, maybe.
Okay, Zen. I like Zen garden. So the Zen garden, obviously, you know, is perfectly made. So I took it like he was causing some chaos and just ruining something because he's upset. But I have no idea, to be honest.
Oh, wait, that could be good, right? Because of like stepping on there is like, it's considered disgraceful.
Don't step on the moss and
he's going against the tradition. Okay. I kind of get that.
So, but it could also be read as what you just said there, but with a different conclusion that he's deciding going against the grain and causing this chaos is a bad thing. So that's what directly leads him to volunteer to second Mariko in place of Kiyama, because he's accepting his place in this garden and trying to acclimate more into Japan. I'm reaching. We're just throwing things at the wall. Somebody might
making,
be partially right
making
here.
The actual, yeah, making the actual choice somebody from Japan, like at that Mariko would make. Like, you're not going to ruin Mariko's plan. She's doing what she believes is right. So when Kiyama doesn't show up, I'm not going to grab her and run to ruin everything. I'm going to give her the mercy that she requested and be her second, even though it's going to kill me to do it.
So let's talk about this, because I thought this was one of the most tension-filled scenes of the entire show. I was verbally spitting my thoughts out next to Dave while we're watching this. I'm like, they're not going to make JB do this. They're not going to fucking make him do this. I was just like, please don't do that. I cannot watch this happen. I was 100% convinced she was going to kill herself, but I didn't know if JB was going to have it in him to second her. I'm happy that neither happened, but they got me. Like, they completely convinced me that this was going to happen. And I love the reveal that Shido comes in, and the reason Kiyama wasn't there to second her was he needed to be part of the vote that would get her the permit to allow her to leave and live. So beautiful scene. The tension was destroying me, and JB's acting again, like, he as an actor was like looking at the love of his life, and he was about to end her life against like his own, like he didn't want to. And I just felt the emotion. I thought he was shaking. I thought you could hear it like a little bit in his voice. Just a 10 out of 10 scene. Like, this might have been my favorite scene of the show, of this episode. I know I said that earlier, but like, there's just so many good scenes in this specific episode. It's why it's the best of the season for me.
Yeah.
And then Anna Sawai's acting, when she is not only deciding to commit seppuku, which you are having to do it yourself, you are literally going to end your own life, but also worrying that maybe JB, yes or no, isn't going to do the right thing and help her here, because if she has to do it herself and she dies by her own hand, she's committing a mortal sin. All of that all at once. And then when Shido comes in and stops it, she pretty much like collapses to the floor, which is exactly what you would think would happen with all that. All of the freaking everything, the adrenaline, everything happening, all the emotions all at once, it just drains from you. And then JB, the man, takes her hand, helps her up. It's love right there. It's love. But
and then,
going
and then
in,
that's what gets some lead.
It goes to the bang diddy bang. And and seriously though, we always talk about this, especially me, because I love the freaking theories, and you're saying how you did it with Dave out loud. I do it in my head if I'm watching it by myself, where I'm just like, so many thoughts are jumping in my head while things are happening. And as soon as the door is closed, I was like, are Torunaga's men going to like be here to like pull her away, and like somehow they're going to think she died behind the screen or something? Like, I was like, why did they close the door? Like, I guess it's so the ladies don't see her die.
I believe.
But I was like, what is happening? Is this like is this part of a plan? And then, you know, Shido comes in. I was like, this is a roller coaster. Yabu, Mariko, Jesus.
He basically looks at her, goes, stop being so dramatic. Like, you're fine. Yeah. Get out of here. Yeah. So good.
Get out of here.
Hey, he looks at JB with the sword and he just chuckles. He's like, are you fucking kidding me? This guy. You guys nailed it. I just to touch on it again. The absolute gonads on JB to step up and be like, I love you, but I will kill you to make sure that you are not worried about ending up in hell. I cannot imagine doing that. And then one line, which I didn't even think about until honestly right now when I was looking at my notes, she sends, you know, my last, what's she say? I leave this poem as my final notes, my final words. I was like, yeah, that doesn't matter because she lives. That's going to be huge, I guess, going forward next episode, because knowing the end, you know, without jumping there first, there's not going to be a whole bunch of closure between those two, right? So that poem, which I thought was, you know, mostly useless because she didn't actually commit seppuku, now is going to be huge going forward. You know, I'm expecting to cry when it's finally announced, because it's going to be something touching. So
you think they'll do like a classic, like Mariko's actress reads the voiceover and we're just like 100 as JB sails off in the sunset with Rodriguez
and cry. Oh, with Rodriguez. Yeah. He moves on quick. Yeah. No, 100%. I feel like she's going to be narrating over it and JB's going to be crying or something like that. Anyway, going forward, that's going to be nuts. And then one tiny thing, she took off the rosary right after Kiyama, she called out for him and he wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I took that in like one of two ways. Like, one, she was upset that Kiyama, as a fellow Christian, wasn't there to back her up, and in frustration took it off. Or two, she didn't want to commit a sin weighing a rosary. I think it was more two.
I took two.
But it also could have been that it was respectful to take it off so you didn't like bleed onto the cross. Like it could have been that as well. It could have been like, so either way. But I
it was
think
also,
two is right.
Yeah, it could even be like, I don't deserve to be wearing this because I'm going to decide to commit seppuku and go with Tornaga's plans over my religion and God's plans. You know, it could be any of those, but I believe two is the closest. And then, of course, you know, like we Oshiba said what happened and probably what Mariko told them to do if it was going to come to fruition. Everyone's just like, oh, I want to leave. I want to leave. I want to leave. Let me out. Mm-hmm. And he was like, fine. You got to ask for a permanent. You're not hostages. Just get the hell out of here.
Yeah. And like, do you want to bring anything up about their final hookup? I think we kind of said it and it's just, it is what it is. It was awesome. It was a great moment.
Give us more. No, just kidding. Well, I'm just
it's over.
Just not going to happen. So this is it. This is the final scene of the episode. It's a very, it's a long sequence of events, but it's mostly just action and mostly Yabu going forward and helping Ishido with his plan to let in the shinobi. And the takeaway was that the shinobi were sent to basically steal Mariko away. I don't think they were sent to kill her. And maybe I read into that wrong, but I think the idea was that she was going to be captured and then there was going to basically rein in some of the nobles there. But instead, she leans into this. If they kill me and there's witnesses and it spreads, it's going to get the job done of what we set out to do. Plus, it's an honorable death and redeems her with her family. So like that's like the ultimate sacrifice. I will be really upset if she is alive because of how unrealistic it is that she survived
there's
that explosion.
No way.
Cool, because like I don't even want to theorize if she is. That just sounds awful to me. But shouting out JB's amazing kill with the gun when he's like, tell him to back up. Bang, bang. That was so cool. Yeah, he uses the guns finally. But great ending of the episode. Hit me with whatever your final thoughts are before we get out of here.
Dude, it's just so much happened here. So much at once. I agree with what you're saying. I don't think they were supposed to kill her. Because she even has a line, like, I won't risk getting captured. Like, I'm not going to go to the gate. I'm going to go this way. Mm-hmm. Just to back up very, very slightly, when Yabu had his own messenger come up and say, hey, your plea with Ishido to switch sides, he'll accept it, but it comes with, you know, one caveat. And we don't know what it is. This is
Which
it.
Is
he
this. Yeah.
He kills the guard, lets everybody in, the shinobi in with the hooks. I don't, like, it's so weird because I understand where he's coming from, right? He was put in this spot. He didn't want to be here. He was just kind of forced in the spot with Ishido saying, hey, I'm going to kill everybody. Because he was never going to leave with Mariko. Like, Yabu was supposed to stay. He was supposed to kill himself, basically, as a traitor. So it was either, hey, stay and kill yourself or do this. Knowing Yabu, kind of get it. You know, wish he was a little bit more loyal would have been nice after everything that we just talked about, but slightly get how he was forced into it because he has been jumping the fence. Like we've been saying, he's been playing the game.
So in my opinion, he did exactly what he was supposed to do, just not knowing he was supposed to do it. What reason do you have for allowing Yabu to just walk back into Osaka if you're Tornaga? What is the purpose of Yabu when you're talking to Mariko and you're saying to JB and Yabu get together yet? Are they doing this? Are they doing that? They're obviously part of the plan. Yabu has no purpose except for to screw the plan up, quote unquote, the plan. I mean, the whole thing that Tornaga does is he brings Mariko to Osaka and we beat this like a dead horse. But if you let her go, you look weak. And if she dies, it's the ultimate goal, almost like Hiramatsu. It's a shame, but you know, she dies. Ultimate goal. Everybody is going to rebel. It's going to be mayhem within the castle. It's almost exactly like what we were saying when we were wondering if Saiki was going to bring Tornaga in. He was going to look weak, and they were going to be able to battle from within. So now he's having his own warriors within almost because the nobles and everybody are going to rebel. So when Ishido says, I'm going to let you go, you can get your permit, you can get the hell out. Tornaga, thinking as part of his plan, Yabu's there because he expects Yabu again to double cross him. And Yabu double crossing him actually gets him what he wants. He lets the shinobi in, what he wants. Mm-hmm. He lets a shinobi in. They come in. Mariko knows the plan. She goes to the door. Boom. Game over. That doesn't happen if Yabu doesn't do what he did. Now,
oh my God, I'm in.
I agree.
Little teeny part of me is like, did Torinaga tell Yabu to do all this? No, I don't think so, because I think that's the whole point. And that's what sucks, because Torinaga is fully using the fact that Yabu's a traitor against him. You know, he uses everybody for their own purpose. He knows who you are, and he uses you for that reason. Mm-hmm. I don't know specifically the reason that JB was brought with Yabu, because Yabu's purpose is fully made aware right here. JB, I don't know. Like, can Torinaga assume JB was going to be Mariko's second and all that kind of stuff? I don't know the point of JB right now, unless he just needs to be present in Osaka when everything happens because he can go to the ship or something later. But Yabu's purpose was made clear this episode, and Torinaga, again, played him like a fiddle.
I hope that gets explicitly stated or something like that, because that's amazing. And what I am just remembering now is I read the description for episode 10 on Hulu, because they always have like the placeholders, and it talked about saying you finally realized the full extent of Torinaga's plan. So like, there's going to be all of these twists that he thought about, and the more that he got correct, that's believable, like things like you're just saying, because in last episode, he says how JB and Yabu are so predictable. If that all comes full circle to mean to have like a double impact like that, wow. Well, I just, Torinaga's back to number one. That's what I'm freaking saying.
Yeah.
We got to Mariko standing in front of the door, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
All right. So I was initially pissed off, right? I'm like, just stand in the back. Why'd you have to fucking stand there? But if this was the plan the whole time, it makes sense. You know, they needed Osaka to be disgraced. Mm-hmm. Torinaga needed Ishido to make the first mistake, like he was always telling Nagakata not to do. And, you know, Mariko dying might have been that first move. So her death might have been inevitable from the
get. I think it was.
I agree. I mean, that's the whole point of Yabu being a part of this, because if Mariko commits seppuku and JB seconded her, done. The plan's fine, because exactly like Oshiba said, if she dies, rebellion. Everyone's going to go nuts. But she didn't. So the backup plan is, now that she is still alive, he's assuming that Ishido is going to say, well, we need to get rid of her or capture her, however you want to say it. And then Yabu is going to want to save his own life, and he's going to help him. So that's what's going to happen. Now, the thing that is also a huge for Mariko, whether she is assuming, I'm going to go ahead and headcanon that she thought this out in her own head too while it's all happening, but these shinobi come in, they're coming in to be discreetly taking her or killing her. Yeah. They blew up a door and she died from blowing something up. The entire city is going to be woken up. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be known that they literally blew her up, which is going to be even worse.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
Yabu's there, Kiri's there, Shizu's there, JB's there. They're going to spread the word too.
All the royal families too. Like, they're going to know everything. Do you think Yabu will have any redemption possible, or is he done?
Dude, we say this every episode for our boy.
I know.
Seriously,
I think about this.
Insane.
But it's like, do you think Torinaga is going to be like, dude, I know you're going to do this.
I knew you're like, a piece of shit. So
I forced you into this spot. I knew you were going to do this to live. But like, as long as you fight with me, you're good. Like,
I don't even know if there's going to be time for that conversation, because I feel like it's going to be mayhem, and then it's going to be let's go, baby. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, I would think that Yabu and JB can have a conversation because they're still together right now. But I don't know that Torinaga is ever going to have a chance to, unless it's not going to be like Storm. I feel like it has to be, but if it's somehow Torinaga just walks in and it happens some other way, Crimson Sky, maybe they'll have a chance.
So that's a good, great point, like that you brought that up. The name of this episode was Crimson Sky. Was this Crimson Sky the whole time? Because Hiramatsu says it's one violent rush against Osaka. So in my head, that's an army rushing Osaka.
Mm-hmm.
Was Crimson Sky?
I would say that maybe it was started.
I think that's what it started.
Because the name of the episode is Crimson Sky. So we assume Crimson Sky got executed this episode. There was no battling between armies, right? So it's like,
yeah, but
there's
assuming
no way
based on the name over reaching to try and explain why it was called Crimson Sky doesn't make sense either. Like, why would it be a, like, because I agree with you. I think that this was the trigger. Now Crimson Sky is going to directly happen in the first 5 minutes of episode 10.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why they called this episode Crimson Sky. Because
podcasters.
Yeah. Said fuck you guys. Because well, like none of this could have been thought out because this was all situational. situational. So it's not like they created Crimson Sky. Toranaga and Hiramatsu created Crimson Sky.
You trying to tell me Toranaga didn't know every single thing that was going to happen? It's a book that he wrote. He's like Cassandra.
He's not that good.
He's like Cassandra in The Magicians, if you want to give me a little one of those. Eh? He has it all written out and we know how everything's going to end. So, no, I totally agree with you, Paul. I think that he obviously has to just think, like, whether Hiramatsu was part of this or not, let's just pretend he was because I like to think that my boy sat down Hiramatsu and talked it out. But say he just says, all right, this is what we're going to do, okay? Here comes Mariko, blah, blah, blah. I don't need to repeat it. It's almost like a choose-your-own-adventure book. Like, if this happens, you can go here, turn to page 52, or you can turn to page 72, you know, and that's how he wrote it out, like he always does with all of his plans. But again, yeah, there's a million things that can go wrong, but my thoughts are just that here's Crimson Sky. If I had it written down, Crimson Sky, part one, Mariko's death. Part two, let's go. You know what I mean?
I mean, I mean, I believe it. I believe it because she says this was the whole reason my father kept me alive. So that could 100% be step one of Crimson Sky all along. Been keeping Mariko around just to die. Just like fucking Dumbledore knows.
Oh, dude. I've been trying to throw that one out there all episode with Dumbledore just leading Harry Potter to his death, man. It's Toranaga and Mariko, man. I've been trying to say that. But unfortunately for us, Mariko is not going to come back to life.
I don't think so.
I mean, at this point in the episode, I'm going to also say spoiler where I just remember when I remember the description, it also says in the wake of a death. So like, it's definitely, she's got to be dead. Otherwise, again, everything breaks.
Yeah. There's no way she's not dead.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure even Anna Sawai, well, you know, you can always bullshit if you want, but I'm pretty sure she came out and did an interview saying how important her death is and all that kind of stuff.
I am looking at IMDb, and she is one of the five characters that appears in 10 episodes. But again, that could be her reading the poem that Paul was talking about earlier. And it's so funny that Toranaga is only in 9 because he wasn't in this one. So I do have to wrap this up soon. So I want to end this with a fun little segment where we're just going to all give a bucket list item that you want for the finale. And doesn't have to be too deep. I have mine written down because I thought of the prompt, so I'll just say mine first. And I've been joking about it like consistently throughout this podcast, but I genuinely want Rodriguez and Father Martin to come to JB's defense or Toranaga's side in some form where it really highlights that they're both genuinely like good people and against like the oppression. So like I would love to see those two be on the good side at some point in episode 10.
That was my number one, was Rodriguez and JB reunion. I just want them to start chucking insults at each other. But honestly, I kind of want some cannon fire to come into play of everything. Because, you know, it makes sense that, you know, JB, it was only in here because that's how John contributed to teaching Toranaga's army was about the cannons. But I genuinely thought that there was going to be more in play coming off that ship. So
totally could be.
Yeah.
Could be a thing. Yeah. So I that's one thing I want to kind of see going forward is them using the new cannon techniques that JB taught them. Yeah, that's, you know, Toranaga to be happy because we know JB and Mariko running off to the sunset isn't a thing anymore. So,
yeah, I'm going to go with Psyche being on the homie side.
Yep.
I really loved his character in his one main episode. We talked about how we were like, oh, he's our boy. And then he's not our boy, but he's still freaking cool as shit. And no matter what, he's obviously not going to get fleshed out. He's not going to get too many more lines except, oh, I'm here for you, bro, like something like that. And then they're going to fight. But either way, I just thought he was such a cool character, good or bad. But hoping that, again, this is also part of the plan and he is inside the castle, I think that would be great. And maybe it's like too like wishful thinking. Maybe it's like too over the top to think that Torunaga also got that right and he's going to have his brother on his side inside the castle. But at the same time, if you're going to think Crimson Sky is going to work, yeah, it would be great to have riots inside the castle, but you still know that you have a decimated army. So having your brother inside also isn't even like giving you too much of
no, it makes
being
the numbers
over the
work.
Top. It just makes it like even. It's not even making you like, you know, a big dog. So yeah, I think that would be cool. I just really like Psyche a lot. So I hope he gets some more.
I left that there because I knew you would say that one. That would have been my secondary wish. And I genuinely think that all three of our bucket list items will hit next episode. But we're going to we'll talk about it at the top of podcast number 10. But for right now, that's it for me. I don't know if you guys have any parting shots.
No, I think another freaking great episode. And in its own weird way, you know, we always joked about the episode 9 for Game of Thrones, the pre-ultimate. It wasn't Battle of the Bastards. It wasn't anything crazy like that, but it was its own, maybe we'll have to talk about it, best episode of the season. We'll have to figure that out once the whole season's over. But yeah, it was a banger. So I can't wait for the finale. It is going to be finally a lot of the action that we were waiting for. Maybe another bucket list is just seeing our boy Torunaga slicing and dicing, because we saw a little taste of that. But we even got our girl Mariko throwing down. So I would like to see Torunaga getting more screen time throwing down.
And keep it in mind when you're watching the finale, you're taking your notes, you're getting ready for the final podcast. We're going to end it with your top. We'll probably raise it to top 5 favorite characters just because it's the finale. Top 5 favorite characters and maybe your top 1 or 2 favorite scenes and then your favorite episode. So like keep all that in your mind. And then when we talk about it after having the final podcast, we can kind of cement our last opinions on Shogun.
All right, guys, one more Shogun Tuesday left. And I will say this is the first time that I fully dove in on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, on Shogun Tuesday, because I'm usually either sleeping or watching it maybe the next day because I want to watch it the day of the pod or something like that. But I watched it on Tuesday. I started tweeting and it was a freaking blast talking to everybody and then having people jump on the Discord and talking more there. It's just, that's like the best part of the podcast. So I'll be with you guys. I'm sure you guys will be too, Luke and Paul. We'll be hanging and banging for Tuesday's last Shogun Tuesday. If you like what you heard, check us out at bingetowntv.com or just type in Bingetown TV on any of your favorite podcast apps. We have so much coming up. June is a huge month for us. We have The Boys, House of the Dragon, The Bear. Crazy month. We're also going to be doing Dark Matter in May. So just check us out there if you guys want to follow along with us. All right. One more episode left. It's sad to say, RIP to our girl Mariko. Once again, we are Bingetown TV. And thank you so much for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.